Telling Tunes with Dr. Kirsten Zemke.
Morena.
Morena, kia ora.
Last show of the year, how are you, Kirsten?
I'm so looking forward to break. I bet everybody is.
I think everyone is at this point. I
think you're all worried about traffic today.
Yes, traffic and Christmas shopping and all the classic things at this time of the year.
So everybody needs to be safe.
Exactly. What have you brought us this morning?
Okay, so this is a polarizing one. It's called Plunderphonics.
What a name. It feels very piratical.
Piratical. That's a name, too. I mean, you know, people could call it collage. It's actually mashups are a version of this.
Okay.
So it actually is sort of an umbrella genre. Now, unlike some of the other genre we've talked about, Plunderphonics was literally coined, invented by one person. We know their name. We know when they invented it. You know how a lot of times it emerges.
It just comes out of somewhere.
And people kind of fight it. So there's a guy, 1985, John Oswald, who made this kind of music that we're going to talk about. And he sort of gave a talk to the Music Technology Association where he sort of, it's like a manifesto that's sort of codifying, you know, what the music's about. So it's basically music that's mostly samples.
Right.
And I know some people think that's normal, but in 1985 it wasn't. People were just getting a hold of samplers. People were playing with turntables. So those are two different ways of kind of making sample-based music. And the whole concept of, is it music?
Is
it derivative? Is it theft?
No.
So it has that... has the moral sort of aspect too. Is it theft? And legal aspects.
Well, there have been lawsuits, right?
Well, like that guy John Osborne, you know, his whole first couple albums were never released because of lawsuits, even though he always itemized where he got the music from, because he wanted to. It's not about pay, but about acknowledging. It'd be like saying, oh, we have violin, we have saxophone, you know, like their instruments. And so he's sort of the icon cohesive unit. But, you know, all around that same time, there are other bands doing that sort of thing, hip hop and the sort of classical electronic tape music people have been doing it a few decades
earlier. So what separated that, like hip hop sampling and tape music, as you're saying, what separated those from Plunderphonics as its own little bubble?
I can tell you that. The classical stuff was using magnetic tape, and they would like cut it up, and repaste it. So this is an audio version of that.
Yeah.
But I guess the intention's also different too, is this intention is to make pop music.
Okay.
And also he talks about that this is the music that's around you whether you like it or not. You're forced to listen to pop music. So this is what's in your ears and the sonic textures around. Why can't you now create with that? You know, why are you forced to now never touch it and not use it? I guess, you know, you going back to Andy Warhol, you know, that sort of
it's kind of got that
if
same
these are the images,
ready-made.
That are, you know, in your brain as part of a collage of what's going on. Why can't you now reuse in those things?
Should we hit a track?
Yeah, so let's do Double D and Steinsky.
We can.
You see.
Three.
You see.
Two.
You see.
One.
You see.
Now we come to the payoff.
So we've listened to 17 seconds, and that's already how many different samples?
Yeah, so it's a little jarring. It's not like a easy listening experience. He calls it active listening, you know, like you're supposed to listen and be, you know, energized and thoughtful about what you're hearing.
It's really intense.
Yeah, it's not pleasant.
Yeah, I was going to say that, but I didn't know if that was rude. Like, as far as pleasant listening goes.
Okay, here's some other adjectives. It's referential and self-conscious.
Referential and self-conscious.
So you say, if you like your music referential.
Is it a teenager? What is it?
What's the self-conscious part?
That while you listen to it, you're like aware instead of just being in the music.
Sort of... Right, I see.
And also they are...
See, this... Rap on it. You can play it and play it. This one almost feels like hip-hop.
This one is hip-hop as well.
Classical scenes.
Because these guys were hip-hop DJs, and this was actually created for like a hip-hop DJ competition that they won. But yeah, I think it crosses that line between kind of a danceable, the majority of, even hip hop collages are usually the base of a rap.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, with this, and these guys do both live and recorded. So, you know, some stuff live with the turntables. So this is in 1984.
So this is from the moment of, like, it becoming a thing,
that's
really.
Right, people playing with stuff. Sharon, do you love the Supreme Team show? And so all this remix culture comes from this sort of...
Okay, that's really interesting.
Crate digging.
Yep.
You know, turntablism, it all comes from this... Oeuvre? Is it oeuvre?
I don't know. I never know.
You can't even look it
that.
Up because, like, how many vowels are in it?
Yeah.
Oeuvre. It's using the sampler and record players as musical instruments.
Yeah.
And that was a huge shift.
That's pretty awesome, I have to say. Yeah.
Yeah, to people who couldn't conceive of that.
I think I have...
Feel the anticipation.
Heel, toe, heel, toe, heel, toe, heel, toe. Hop forward.
They so also like spoken word, you know, radio, and it also means you can use politics, so you can get like political speeches.
See, I think it's really interesting. I meant to say something and then I got completely distracted by the song as well. But I think it is really interesting because it is exactly like what you'd imagine a visual collage. If you were to take that exact same way of making and apply it to sound, this is what you'd get, you know?
And but if the collage was like magazines...
Yeah,
other people's photographs. You know what I mean.
Something like from a newspaper. Yeah.
Would you fit Girl Talk into that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely. Their songs were too rude, so I.
Oh, sorry.
Well, no, that's why I didn't put them on today.
Yeah. I'm with you.
There were some good ones. So I was like, oh no, that has rude words, because they were being taken like hip hop songs.
Yeah.
A lot of booties.
All right, should we jump into a slightly more recent one? Which one would you like to go into next?
So this is Avalanches, and this is 2000.
Didn't like that horse, did you, Tess?
She gave me a fright.
I'm afraid he's not, Miss Fishmore. Dexter's truancy problem is way out of hand. The Baltimore County School Board have decided to expel Dexter from the entire public school system.
Well, Mr. Kirk, I'm an offended gentleman of Dexter's truancy, but surely...
I feel like the Avalanches is probably one that most BFM listeners will be quite familiar with. Thoughts on Point the Phonics? 5395, we'd love to hear from you guys. What do you reckon? This is quite a recognisable track, this one. How is it sort of... So obviously you've got, in the 80s, you've got this big hip-hop kind of side to this.
Yeah, and house music.
House music, like actual rave and DJ culture. But what is this? Because the Avalanches don't sit in those worlds necessarily. What are they in relation to Plunderphonics?
Well, that's why Plunderphonics is the only word for them, because they're sort of, you know, don't exist in pop and rock. Whereas like DJ Shadow around the same time.
We just got a text about DJ Shadow.
Chemist can exist... in hip-hop, but they do have this more Plunderphonics aspect where the music's 90%+ samples.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really about servicing a rap. One article talked about, it's the difference between if you go to the zoo and you or into a wild animal park and you take your own photos versus buying the official postcards.
Yeah, okay.
So this is you taking... Ooh.
I see.
Some people say it's not theft or even derivative or a defilement. It's creating a new music, but it's also rediscovering original artists. You know, like
totally,
people hear the samples. Or it's a clone independent of the parent.
Ooh. Ooh. Dolly the sheep. Frontier psychiatry. It's not easy listening. I think that's the thing. That's not to say it's like hard to listen to, but you do have to work to listen to
it.
Yeah,
it's more conscious and less sort of beat and vibe driven.
This is a very cute text. Someone said, my favourite musical experience this year has been the BFM Breakfast Show, and in particular, Travelling Tunes with Dr. Kirsten Zemke. Tautoko to you all. You're awesome. Mere kurehe meti.
Aww.
That that's lovely. Mini Kurahi Meti to you too.
Happy, happy, happy holidays.
Hey, yo, someone should do a big Christmas
smash. Christmas
just
smash.
Just destroy them.
I feel like Plunderphonics probably, there's definitely Christmas Plunderphonics out there.
Someone texted in saying Negative Land got lots of BFM play at the time and got some trouble for their plundering. So we're actually going to play a Negative Land.
Should we jump into that one now?
Yeah,
because it was a very BFM thing.
I'm going to turn you off.
Sing along if you know the words.
1, 2, 3, 4. You. It's not really the sing along type of music, is it? You're really going for it there.
Yeah, I'm just rocking this one.
2, 3, 4. You.
I find it quite, this one especially, quite hypnotic. It's really hard to stop, you can get quite swept away in these tracks.
Someone texted in saying, like, finding all your stolen shit in one bag, big pile in the back of some thief's house and all smashed to pieces.
I love that. That is so perfect. But so it does have a sort of protesty aspect to it, deconstructing
totally.
Music, small group masking, overlaying, ownership and melody. Like it really kind of undercuts our conceptions of music. So this is actually from 2019.
This is new.
Apparently they've been playing this song live.
That's actually one thing, because I think I saw the Avalanches or part of their set when they played at Auckland City Limits a couple of years ago. And that was quite interesting because I had wondered how do you play this music live. And it was really interesting. They had a lot of guests come out on stage and do bits of it and stuff. But I wonder how you would do something like this live.
I know. I mean, even on turntables, it seems still a little more complex than, say, some hip-hop turntables that has you revisiting and repetition.
Yeah.
You know, so you're not having 8 samples at one time. You're having one on the left and one on the right, you know?
Now, are these groups as well that have worked in quite, like, visual ways too? You know how you get people who use their VDJ kind of thing?
Especially Negative Land, the more recent stuff, you know, I guess because of the internet, absolutely mixing up the visuals. And, like, this song is, you know, resurrecting the propaganda from the last 15 years based on your user data. And apparently the video is also like the same sort of thing, collecting these sort of images.
Someone said, how is this different from cultural appropriation? Do we need to approach it more sensitively now? I'd imagine you do need to be more sensitive, or maybe people are more attuned to it. I don't think it's necessarily cultural appropriation unless you are appropriating from another culture.
Well, that's right. I think cultural appropriation is related to vulnerability and power. Yeah. And so it's taking from the more vulnerable,
mm-hmm.
whereas this is more Robin Hood. I think it's like you're taking from the rich, I guess, is the sort of perception. Well, like Joan Oswald, some of his work will be a collage of only one artist, like all Elvis or mm-hmm. all Dolly Parton or all Michael Jackson. And so, they don't have that vulnerability.
No.
And I think it was Negative Land that did something with U2. So it's and got in big trouble. And so it's not, you know, it doesn't have that same inequality of power as cultural appropriation does. But on the other hand, you're right. If everything's all equal, it's their intellectual property.
Yeah. Okay, here we go. Video game noises.
We are not destroying anything.
We and the creatures that assemble your phone.
It's easy to imagine the end of the world.
Yeah.
Tess is flaring her nostrils.
Sorry. You're not meant to tell people that. Rest of the
world. A nostril flare is a good visceral response.
Yeah, I think that the thing that is interesting about this is it's got a kind of manifesto quality to it as well, this particular track.
Yeah, absolutely.
We can imagine the end of capitalism.
And it is, and we know the music industry can be so complicit politically, you know, so this music's actually really taking action, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, someone said KLF Chill Out album can't be re-released due to samples.
Oh, wow. Yeah, see, a lot
that
of
must
that
must go for big bucks on Discogs.
That's the other, you know, the British house music as well. Yeah. They had a lot of that S-Express and M-A-R-R-S, you know?
So this was mostly based in the States, or did it kind of bleed across?
Well, Avalanches are Australia.
Yeah,
so that's cool.
I do love a track that builds in its own applause at the end. That is Negative Land with Destroying Anything. What were we listening to before this? It was
the Avalanches.
Yes, with Frontier Psychiatrist.
Did you like my New Zealand accent too?
Avalanches.
Yep.
Swallow your vowels.
Avalanches.
And Lesson One, Double D and Steinsky was the first and one of the OGs as well.
Yes.
Hey,
yes.
Thank you so much, Kirsten, for bringing us all these wonderful genres across this year. We've loved it, and we will see you again in the new year.
All right.
Have a wonderful Christmas.
Jingle bells.
Jingle bells.
That was Travelling Tunes with Dr. Kirsten Zimke.
It's